We're continuing in our study of the blessed life, and we are now in verse 9, where we see, "Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God." What a great statement. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. And I think just immediately we have to just ask, well, what does that look like in terms of being called peacemakers? What is Jesus describing? And of course, there are some things that are readily evident that come right to mind, that the people of God, that those who belong to His kingdom, as Jesus is on the mountain and He is proclaiming the good news of the kingdom, and calling people into this relationship, that the people who belong to that kingdom, then they are not people who create strife. They're not troublemakers. They don't cause division. They do not cause problems and hatred and dispute and things like that, but rather are people who desire to assist in peace, desire to assist in bringing about a reconciliation. Now, one of the things that I think is absolutely critical, and we talk about what it means to be a peacemaker and really what that looks like, is sometimes peace is considered to have been achieved in a number of different ways that is not really peace at all. That true peacemaking does not mean that we'll just pretend that there's absolutely no differences between us, or that we'll suppress the differences, or we'll just tolerate the differences, or things like that. That's not peace. And sometimes peace is defined that way as, well, nobody shot each other today, so therefore there's peace. That doesn't mean that there's peace. That would be like saying there's peace in the Middle East because nobody shot a gun today. There's not peace over there. It just happens to be today there was not a skirmish, but there's not peace. And sometimes we will falsely define peace as, well, there wasn't any strife or conflict today, so therefore we have peace. That's not the idea. And neither is peace then to come about by just simply pretending that there's absolutely no differences. And so often that is a common tactic. We'll just try to maintain peace and we'll just have peace so nobody believe anything, nobody say anything, keep all of your ideas to yourself, and we'll all be fine, we'll all just get along. And so often that's the portrayal of peace within religion. You know, the two things you can't talk about at a dinner table, right? One of them is the things of God. You can't talk about religion, right? So that's how we maintain peace. That is a false definition and not the idea at all. When Jesus speaks of the concept of peace, we're talking about we will bring peace by creating a love for the other person that causes us to transcend the difference or permit a reconciliation in spite of the difference. That's the whole idea of what peace looks like, is right. Recognizing there is a difference, recognizing that there is a problem, but how are we going to overcome the problem? How are we going to solve the problem? Because the problem is not solved by not doing anything. Many marriages explode because peace is supposedly achieved by not saying anything to each other. Then all of a sudden, boom, there it goes. Peace is achieved by creating a love for the other person that is able to overcome the difference. And that's what we have to look at in terms of what it means to be peacemakers, because this is ultimately, I think, a really big failure in many churches and easily can be a temptation for many churches to try to pretend that there are no differences or that there are no issues. I've seen that when I've had friends of mine move to a particular church and they would ask about a particularly controversial issue, one offhand, like divorce and remarriage. What is your stance on divorce and remarriage? And the preacher told my friend, well, you don't have to worry about that because we don't teach on those things and we don't talk about that. There's your peace. That's not peace. That is not peace in the slightest. And one of the reasons that's not peace is by ignoring the differences and ignoring the issues and ignoring the truth of these things. All that you have done is set a ticking time bomb that will eventually go off when a conflict in that arena does arise. You just can't pretend forever. Eventually, there will be an issue. Eventually, we will have a disagreement. Eventually, there will be a conflict, and there must be a readiness to handle the conflict. And I've watched many churches divide, many divisions and explosions happen because there is not an activity, an action, a forward thinking and discussion about the differences, about the issues, so that there can be peace that's maintained through the disagreements. That's one of the reasons why we do Bible classes the way that we do, just so that it's not just simply me telling you everything that I figured out in the Bible every single week, but that you have the opportunity to yell back at me and tell me why I'm wrong, and we can discuss those things and work through those things and come to an understanding, as Ephesians 4 talks about us growing up in the faith and working together and coming to the unity of the faith. That happens not by ignoring differences, but rather than for us to create a love for one another in spite of the differences, in spite of these points of view, so that we can become what God has called us to be. And so, when we talk about then this idea of blessed are the peacemakers, recognize that Jesus is not saying blessed are the peaceful, because that's entirely different. You know, you can be very peaceful while the world is burning around you. That's not being a peacemaker. That's not the same thing. Nor is being a peacekeeper the same thing as being a peacemaker. A peacemaker means that you are going to actively involve yourself and deal with and address differences and conflicts with the goal of trying to bring about a reconciliation. The reason why that understanding is so important is because often our definition of peace looks like this. That's not my business. All right. Somebody, brother so-and-so and sister so-and-so having an issue, and we just go, that ain't my problem. That's not my business. That's not being a peacemaker. That's trying to be a peacekeeper. That's trying to be peaceful and just say, it's not my arena. A peacemaker looks at the conflict, looks at the dispute, and tries to address it in a way to be able to bring about reconciliation. That's what this does, and that's what it means for us to belong to the kingdom, is we can't look at differences, look at problems or conflicts and say, well, it doesn't involve me, and so that's none of my business. Absolutely is. You've been called to be a peacemaker. You've been called to look for a way to be able to bring about peace, to be able to bring about a reconciliation. And so it is our goal and our job to be able to do that. And that's why the New Testament scriptures will so often give us that very picture. Like Romans 12 and verse 18, if possible, as far as it depends on you, live peaceably with all. As far as it depends upon you, here you are looking at a scenario and you are going to do what is going to create reconciliation. You are going to do what is going to bring about the peaceful resolution. You are going to be the one who will put yourself into the middle of the difficulty, into the middle of the conflict and say, now how can we bring about a peace that will work here in this situation? You see that in Ephesians chapter 4 and verse 1. Therefore, I am prisoner for the Lord, urge you to walk in a manner worthy of the calling to which you have been called, with all humility and gentleness, with patience, bearing with one another in love, eager to maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Here are these commands given to us. Live peaceably with one another. Bring about that peace. Be a peacemaker. Maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. Bear with one another in love. And so I think the question that immediately has to come up then is, so why do we have so many problems all the time? If the scriptures are clear, you're supposed to live at peace. If you're supposed to be peacemakers, maintain the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace, to love one another in that way, to bring that kind of thing about, then why is it that there are often so many conflicts? And so many disagreements and disputes and so many divisions and things like that. I think the scriptures give us a great teaching on why that is the case, why there are so many disputes and so many disagreements like that. Listen to how God said this through James. James 4 and verse 1, where he said, "What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire and do not have, so you murder. You covet and cannot obtain, so you fight and quarrel. You do not have because you do not ask. You ask and do not receive because you ask wrongly to spend it on your passions. Notice what God's answer is as he asks the question. What causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? And notice what he says is, it's that you're listening to your own desires and your own passions, not God's. Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? You desire. He says, the problem is with you. You're listening to your own desires. You are listening to your own passions. You are doing what you desire rather than doing what are the desires of God. And so often that's the whole problem with conflict, and why conflicts arise is that we are following our own desires. And that's why there is hatred and malice and bitterness and divisions and strife. And how often those things come because of our own selfish or foolish or quite insignificant desires. Here's what I mean by that. We have strife because, you know, that person was disrespectful to me. Really? Selfish, insignificant, and yet will cause a problem. Someone was mean. Mean words were said to me. And so we have strife. We cause problems. Somebody said things that were hurtful to me. Somebody said words that were unthoughtful. Somebody hurt my feelings. Someone was uncaring. Somebody didn't do the things that I wanted them to do. The cause of our fractures and the cause of divisions is our selfishness. This is what James is pointing at. He's saying it's your own desires that are bringing about the strife. The reason why you quarrel and you fight, why you do all these things and have this, is because you're thinking about yourself. You're thinking about your desires, your wants. You're not thinking about God's desires. You're certainly not thinking about the other person, but you've ignored even the desires of God. You're thinking about what matters to you. And I want us to recognize it's very easy to be a troublemaker. Think about yourself and you'll be a troublemaker. Very easy. You can cause all kinds of problems, all kinds of conflicts, all kinds of disputes. Just worry about yourself. Think about yourself first and watch all the trouble you will cause in your wake. That's exactly what Jesus is getting at and recognizing. What are peacemakers? Peacemakers don't worry about themselves. Peacemakers don't think about themselves. And they're not going to be following their own desires. In fact, listen again to how James said that in verse 1. When he says there, what causes quarrels and what causes fights among you? Is it not this, that your passions are at war within you? Listen to that imagery, because he just said, you have desires within yourself that are going to battle. You have all these desires within yourself, and they're all warring with each other. Where do your quarrels and fights come from? You have these passions that are at war within you. This is why I believe the last blessing that Jesus just said in verse 8 that we talked about last week was that you had to be pure in heart. Don't be double-minded, because that's the war that's going on within us. Here's the right thing I need to do, but here's my sinful desire that wants to do this. And so often we follow the sinful desire. We listen to our own passions. We listen to our own desires. And even worse then, as Jesus calls us to be peacemakers and how often there may be conflict, not only do we often not choose to be peacemakers, but sometimes we can escalate the conflict. Here are two people who are having an issue, a conflict, or a dispute, and rather than stepping into the middle and trying to bring about reconciliation, we'll just choose a side. And we'll just continue the battle. This is one of the ways you see churches divide, is you see people lining up with one person and another group of people lining up with the other person, And there is no cause of people trying to step in the middle and cause peace between the two. Now the war that was between two people has become a whole church war. And now you've got these people sitting on this side and this people sitting on this side until finally one group says, we've had enough, and they leave. The whole problem is the selfish desires and how we can escalate the problem and cause more difficulty and cause more problems. Sometimes we're the ones that are throwing the gasoline on the fire when Jesus has called us to be able to make peace. You know when this is really hard? This is really hard when the dispute involves your really good Christian friend or longtime friend or family members. It's really easy to just immediately side with one or the other rather than trying to bring about peace. You just go, well, it's my family, so we'll circle the wagons. Well, that's my longtime friend, so whatever they say must be true. I'm going to go with them no matter what. That's not being a peacemaker. That's not bringing about reconciliation. That's not what God has called us to do. Even when it's family, even when it's friends, even when it's longtime members or founders of the congregation who've been there forever and are well respected, we're not supposed to draw sides, but to look for reconciliation. We're supposed to be the ones who would step into the fray, not pour gasoline on the fire, but to bring peace. That's what we've been called to do. So often we refuse to bring about peace and we make the conflict even worse because we're all about who started it. I mean, talk about first grade kind of conflict, right? That's how we settled it on the playground. Well, he started it. As my kids would do when they were young. Well, they're the one that started. I don't care who started it. How are we going to finish it? We're supposed to do good in the face of evil. It doesn't matter who started it. God did not come along in Romans 12 and say, now do good in the face of evil unless they started it. Of course they started it. They're doing evil. You do good anyway. It doesn't matter who started it. People will say dumb things, hurtful things, do hurtful actions all the time. And unfortunately, because we're human and we're sinful, we will do it to each other. And then we get really mad. Well, that wasn't a Christian thing to do. No, it wasn't. Because we're all a mess. We're all trying to do better. And it's not the goal then to pour gasoline on the fire. The goal is, who cares who started it? How can we solve it? How can we fix it? Where can we bring about reconciliation? How can we solve the problem? I am amazed at how often our pride gets in the way that we can't just say two words that would solve almost any dispute. I'm sorry. We won't say I'm sorry. If you just say I'm sorry, you'd probably solve 90%+ of the issues. But no, we're right. And we will be right till the day we die. Instead of being peacemakers, instead of being people who will step in and say, let's reconcile this, let's fix this. And this is exactly what Jesus was teaching in Matthew 18, wasn't he? If your brother sins against you, have a tiff, have a meltdown, have a fight, email the whole church, gather everybody on your side, and take it to the church and have a blowout. That's what Matthew 18 said, what Jesus said to do. If somebody sins against you, boy, you just run them through the mud and you take it out on them. You wear them out because that was not being a Christian, and you're right. No, Matthew 18 says, if my brother sins against me, I will sit back with my arms crossed and I will be bitter and I'll be angry until that person comes groveling back to me and talks to me in kind words and apologizes for what they've done. And until they've done that, I'm not going to talk to them, I'm not going to sit by, I'm not going to go to their house and say a word to them ever again. Aren't you a peacemaker? Matthew 18, if your brother sins against you, you go to him and him alone. Nobody else. Nobody else is supposed to know. You don't tell your friends. You don't tell other church members. You don't tell anybody else. If somebody does something against you, you go to that person by yourself and say, hey, that hurt. And if you're dealing with a Christian, you know what they're going to say? I'm sorry. I didn't mean that. Problem solved.
but we escalated. We caused the problems. Our selfish desires is what James says. We throw the gasoline on the fire because we're right or we have an issue or whatever it is that we're propping ourselves up over, rather than seeing what Jesus has called us to do, that we are supposed to be peacemakers. We are to be the ones that cause peace. Don't be the troublemaker. I'll tell you, just as an aside, wasn't in my notes, but I just thought about this. Troublemakers are exhausting to a church. Exhausting. Because the whole effort of the congregation is to constantly have to appease the troublemaker rather than doing the work that we've been called to do of reaching lost souls and helping those who are weak and dealing with those who are struggling with sin. You're causing trouble, and we have to constantly deal with you rather than dealing with the things that are really important of why we're here and keeping us on purpose and on mission. Troublemakers are exhausting and drag a congregation down. Don't be a troublemaker. Be a peacemaker. So how can we do that? What can we do to become peacemakers? How can we improve in that? Because I think the Scriptures do give us a lot of good reasons why we must be peacemakers. One of them, I think, is just simply the most obvious. And that is because that's what God did with you and me. That's what God did with you and me. How often it describes how this was the work of Christ for us, like in Colossians 1, verse 19, "For in Him," speaking of Christ, "all the fullness of God was pleased to dwell, and through Him to reconcile Himself to all things, whether on earth or in heaven, making peace by the blood of His cross." We want to make peace with other people when they wrong us and have done things against us or said things against us, because that's what God did for us. God was determined to reconcile us to Him, even though we have ridiculously violated every single law that He's ever given. And God wanted to bring peace anyway. God had every right to come to the earth and say, "Well, you've wronged me. Light the fire." He came to bring peace. The whole essence of the cross is that God desired to reconcile us to Him. The reason why we want to reconcile relationships here on earth with one another is because God went to such astounding lengths to reconcile us to Him. Because God is a peacemaker, and He has made peace for us where we deserve wrath, we deserve judgment. Who started it? Us. And He's the one that's finishing it with the cross. And He says, "I'll reconcile you anyway. You started it, but I'll heal you. I'll reconcile you. I'll let you be my people even though you did wrong. I will bring you back into relationship. And I will make you a child of God again." Because we look at God and are amazed at how God can overlook all of our sins and transgressions and wrongs and violations. And yet God loved us so much that He made reconciliation through the cross. And then we turn around to each other and choke each other out over our hurt feelings because somebody didn't do something or just said something we didn't like. Romans 14 and verse 19. "So then let us pursue what makes for peace and for mutual upbuilding." So our goal then, to try to pursue the things and do the things that would bring about peace, as Paul spoke to these churches and told them here toward the end of the letter of Romans, pursue this. Listen to how he told it to the Corinthians. The Corinthian church is a mess, right? I mean, the Corinthian church is a total mess with all of the issues and all of the disagreements. The first four chapters of 1 Corinthians are all about their divisions and their disputes. Listen to how 2 Corinthians ends. "Aim for restoration, comfort one another, agree with one another, live in peace, and the God of love and peace will be with you." God is the God of love and peace, and He expects us to exhibit the same for other people. Aim for restoration. Reconcile with people. Comfort the other person.
help the other person, agree with that person, live at peace with that person. And God gives us a strong warning about this as well. Not only speaking to the positive of how we should reconcile and bring about peace, but listen to how he said this to these Corinthians when they were arguing and disputing there in the first letter. Do you not know that you are God's temple and that God's Spirit dwells in you? If anyone destroys God's temple, God will destroy him, for God's temple is holy and you are that temple. Don't you know who you are? And here in chapter 3, he's speaking collectively. You're the temple of God. You're the people of God. Don't destroy what you have here, or God will destroy you. I don't know how God could be any stronger. You destroy the peace. You want to be the troublemaker. You're not in a relationship with God. For too long, too often, Christians have said, well, I have the truth, and so I can blow my brother and sister in Christ up because I have the truth. You have the truth, but you don't get to destroy the temple of God. You have the truth, and you use it to bring about peace, reconciliation. You use it to bring people back, not to harm them and destroy them. That's not the intention that God has given to us. What a warning that's given there. Listen to the way James uses it as a warning here in James 3, verse 17. The wisdom from above is first pure, then peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy, good fruits, impartial, and sincere. Before I read the rest of that, just catch that beginning part. Here's spiritual wisdom, heavenly wisdom, wisdom from above. Here's what we should look like as God's people. Pure, peaceable, gentle, open to reason, full of mercy, good fruits, impartial. And sincere. And a harvest of righteousness is sown in peace by those who make peace. God sowing the harvest of righteousness if you're a peacemaker, not if you're a troublemaker. We are called to enter into the fray, enter into the conflict, enter into disputes and divisions, and not say, not my problem, but say, how can I help this? How can I bring reconciliation? I have two souls in jeopardy, and I need to step into the fray and determine how I can help, how I can bring peace to the relationship, not how to make it worse. I think it's really interesting as well, the ending. Blessed are the peacemakers, for they shall be called sons of God. This is one of the few times where it's actually better to keep the word sons of God rather than going generic and saying children of God. And the reason why is because this was an idiom that the Hebrews used, and it's an idiom that we use, that speaks of sharing a particular attribute with the other person. We use that today. You say somebody's their father's son. What do you mean by that? That they share the very same attributes. You see that in the Gospels a lot. Jesus will do that. Remember in John, Jesus will here's the Pharisees. They think they are sons of Abraham. And Jesus tells them, no, your father is the devil. What does he mean by that? You have attributes that do not match up with Abraham. You have attributes that match up with the devil. That's the whole idea of saying sons of God. That being sons of God means that we have adopted God's characteristics about peacemaking because that's who God is. God is a peacemaker. God reconciles. And so for us to be called sons of God is a beautiful declaration that God is saying, you're becoming like me. You know, that's sometimes a nice thing when we say that about others, and they'll say, like, you know, the child or daughter will say, they're a chip off the old block. That's the idea right here, what this is saying. Could there be greater praise than that to say you are adopting the characteristics of God Himself when you are a peacemaker? the reason why you want to step into the fray and be one who brings about reconciliation is because it is a picture then of the quality of God Himself that He has shown toward us of love and peace and reconciliation. And men and women of God are supposed to do the same thing, of show that very thing. To think about how God came and He ended the hostility between not only us and God, but you read Ephesians 2, and He even ended the hostility between Jew and Gentile. God is a reconciler. God is a peacemaker. And just simply boil that down, Jesus did not come to the earth to make things worse. He didn't come to the earth and go, "Wow, you all are really terrible. I'm just out of here." He didn't come to make things worse. He came to make things better. That's the goal. I had that happen as many years ago when my kids were in soccer. And there was this kid. And he apparently thought playing soccer meant playing football. And he is running around and he is with the elbow. He is knocking kids down. We're talking about 5-year-olds and 6-year-olds. And this kid, boy, he's a big old kid. He's shoving kids down left and right. And, of course, our volunteer refs at that time, I'm one of the coaches, and one of our volunteer refs are, 17 years old, and so they're not doing anything about it. And it finally got to the point where, as the kid did it again, I think he knocked my assistant coach's kid down. My assistant coach grabbed the kid by the arm and pulled him to the side and just kind of gave him a verbal look for him. "You are harming all these kids and all." After the game, the mother of that child had pretty much a conniption about the assistant coach doing that. And so a dispute is brewing at this moment, and an off-duty sheriff happened to be one of the parents at the game and walked up to the mom and said, "Now you can press charges on him for that." And I thought, as I was putting this list together, that's not being a peacemaker. Talk about dumping gasoline on the fire. And we, for some reason, want to do that. Let's make it worse. Let's just make it way worse. Rather than just telling both of them, "Yeah, you're both wrong. Yeah, parent, your child shouldn't be doing that. No, assistant coach probably shouldn't be grabbing kids. But let's try to figure it out. Not, hey, let's get a lawsuit together. Let's make a big deal. Let's get somebody arrested here over 5-year-olds playing soccer." How often in the body of Christ, such really insignificant things. And I just hope you'll think about how really insignificant our conflicts and disputes can be. That they really are very self-centered. They really are so much about ourselves. And really not in consideration of what is good for the other person. What are truly shows the ways of God in this scenario? How can I enter this and just reconcile and just be a peacemaker? For that's what shows you're in the kingdom of God. That's what Jesus is saying in this great blessing in these Beatitudes. If you want to know if you're in the kingdom of God, here's one of the qualities you'll have. You'll be a person who brings about peace. So create peace with one another. Do not sit back and say, "It's not my problem." Facilitate peace. Apply spiritual wisdom, not selfish desires or selfish ambitions, so that peace can be created in whatever the disagreement is, whatever the issue may be. My father has always kidded about it, and I've thought it was funny, and I've kidded about it too, but it really is true that what do you suppose we're all going to do in eternity if we can't get along here? We all get to eternity and build fences and you can't come over here and see me. The whole point is to be able to get along here. If we can't get along here, why do we think we have any opportunity for eternity? Why do we think that's at all going to happen? We're all going to divide lines or up there too. We need to make peace here and now. We're going to sing a song and we